The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, I always wonder how they know what the temperature feels like. If it is 3, but it feels like 1. How do you know if it feels like 1? How does that measure come about?
Maybe Zanati,
you've got an answer
to
that.
No, she definitely doesn't have an answer. Not even, Zanati, do you have an answer?
No, not
exactly.
Even.
Exactly, I knew. I could answer that for her because it's such nonsense. And then they say it's fair. No, it's not fair. It can't be 1 degrees feels like -4 and it's fair. Anyway, but that's something completely different. So Anthony, also starting off with COVID-19, because as you heard from Dr. Anton Meiberg last night, was not our president's finest hour. As far as the doctors are concerned anyway, I think some people in business might disagree, but it is a very, very scary situation where the numbers are. We just spoke to the chairman of Hatzola here in South Africa. He says hundreds of cases within our community. And the numbers are rising dramatically all the time, and yet everything's just kind of been opened up. So very scary here. In Israel, the Corona cabinet yesterday approved opening of train services and event halls next week in spite of a further increase in the number of new cases yesterday. So also seems to be, although not the same numbers that we're experiencing, also some inconsistency there. What restrictions have been put in place to prevent further spread?
Well, the numbers have been increasing slowly. I mean, we've been up, we've been down, and we are definitely climbing up again. As we've discussed over the last few days, there is this massive conflict of interests between keeping the economy open and keeping life moving as opposed to trying to protect people's health. And we can't simply keep locked down indefinitely, and we can't continue to be open and closed and open and closed. We need some sort of a new normal sort of base level from which we're going to operate. And the Corona cabinet decided yesterday, interestingly, that they will allow the train service to begin from Monday, and they will allow cultural events and event halls to open, which will be limited to 250 attendees at a single venue or 500 attendees if the particular event has been approved by the Director General of the Culture of Sport and Sport Ministry. In addition to that, the trains will open, interestingly, on Monday, not on Sunday. Sunday is a very, very busy transport day, and they didn't want to have the trains opening on that day, even though that's really the day that the trains are needed. But the way that the trains are going to work is that apparently you have to book a ticket online and reserve a place 48 hours ahead of your journey. Trains will be limited to a maximum of 500 passengers. And of course, masks will need to be worn at all times. And the temperature of travelers will be checked upon their entry to the stations. Nighttime trains will not operate at this stage. And there will be no stops at Ben Gurion Airport because, like, Ben Gurion Airport's not really working at the moment. But the whole point is that there's no spontaneity on the trains. If you haven't booked your ticket 48 hours before your travel time, then you kind of have to catch the bus or to walk or whatever your alternative plans are. So no train spontaneity to try somehow to limit the number of people getting on the trains. 288 new cases tested positive for COVID-19 just in the last 24 hours as of the end of yesterday. Now the number of active cases is about 4,000. What's interesting is that the number of serious cases doesn't seem to be rising in any sort of meaningful way. Still 30 to 40 people actually hospitalized out of the 4,000 who have been diagnosed, and only 20 odd are requiring intubation at the moment. So it seems as if most of the cases that we're dealing with right now are not that serious. Of course, things look differently and things will be treated differently when we see more serious cases and more pressure on the medical facilities and people becoming very, very ill. They've also designated so-called red zones, which have higher levels of infection, where schools will be closed and gatherings in those red zones will be limited to 10 people. And those red zones include the Ajami neighborhood of Jaffa, Rahat and Arara. They are Bedouin towns which have been designated as red zones. So I think this is going to be the new way of trying to deal with things, to try and pinpoint where the problem is and to create some element of lockdown at that location only in order to try to prevent the further spread, but to allow everybody else effectively to continue as best as they can under the current circumstances. So this is, once again, as we've seen with this whole COVID-19 situation, Howard, it's a kind of trial and error. Just try it out, see if it works. If it is, you become a hero. If it doesn't work, then you become a villain. But it's all trial and error because nobody really knows what the answers are.
Indeed, and as what I've been saying all along, I think we're bumbling through this, trying to figure it out, figure out the best way possible to handle it. The public transport on Shabbat bill was defeated in the Knesset yesterday. What were the arguments on either side of this?
Well, this is an interesting one because the bill was proposed by the Meretz, a member of Knesset, Tamar Zandberg, to allow public transport to operate on Shabbat as a general law in the country. As people may be aware, Saturday being Shabbat, the Sabbath, the day of rest, public transportation is prevented by law from operating across Israel, with a few exceptions. There are just a handful of municipal jurisdictions which have allowed public transport. Haifa, for example, is the most noticeable of all of them. There is a very significant mix between Arabs and Jews living in Haifa. Not everybody is Jewish and not everybody keeps the Shabbat, not even those who are Jewish. And so public transportation is allowed there. But this was an attempt to try somehow to introduce legislation that will generally across Israel allow public transportation. Interestingly, Kahol Lavan, the Blue and White Party, who advocated in favor of public transportation on Shabbat during their election campaign and had it as part of their election platform, voted against the legislation yesterday, which I think was quite an interesting turnaround for the books. So as things stand at the moment, no public transportation on Shabbat. But here's a little interesting little sting in the tail, because then when the bill was defeated, Tamar Zandberg decided to try to introduce legislation that will ban the use of ministerial cars and drivers on Shabbat. So what she's saying is that if there's no public transportation, then ministerial cars should not be used on Shabbat either. And this is going to be a very fascinating bill vote if it does come to the Knesset to vote on.
Because you live and die by your own sword, actually. That's how it happens.
Well, exactly. Well, that's exactly right. Of course, if they ban the use of ministerial vehicles on Shabbat, then the ministers, those of whom would prefer to use their cars on Shabbat, will have to think twice about whether they want to support that. But the point is that she's going to get support from the religious parties who would absolutely agree to the ban of ministerial cars on Shabbat. But there's a double-edged sword to this, because if you do not agree to ban the use of ministerial cars on Shabbat, then potentially the whole transportation on Shabbat becomes reopened again, because this kind of looks a little bit like it's double-face operations here, with people saying on the one hand that the general public can't use transportation on Shabbat, but we in the ministerial community, we're entitled to use our cars. So I think that's going to be an interesting debate if it does come to the Knesset, and I'll be watching carefully to see how that one goes. But as things stand at the moment, no change to the public transportation situation on Shabbat in Israel.
Yeah, I suspect that this is going to be one that will continue to be discussed for some time. The IDF thwarted an attempt to smuggle weapons to Gaza from northern Sinai. How was the smuggling ring intercepted?
Well, this is an interesting one, because this has all been undertaken by sea. Weapons were being smuggled from northern Sinai into the Gaza Strip using boats, effectively. And the IDF only recently allowed the release of this information where the operation itself took place apparently several weeks ago. Shin Bet officers, they identified the smuggling ring. They were in cooperation, of course, with the IDF, and this enabled the detection of these vessels that were being used to smuggle weapons from northern Sinai into the Gaza Strip. So it was maritime intelligence operators from the Navy effectively who managed to locate these suspected vessels and sent naval troops off to pursue it and, of course, to intercept the vessel. Interestingly, they also found two terrorist operatives on board the vessel when it was intercepted. And these two guys, one of whom is quite well known to the security authorities, a senior smuggler. He's worked with terrorist groups in Gaza already for some time. And so they consider his arrest to have been a very significant achievement. And he was indicted already in the Beersheba District Court to appear in court. But of course, in the meantime, the IDF and the security authorities have been gaining as much information as they can from these two individuals and from the boat that was being intercepted about the smuggling ring and the route that was being used to try to bring these weapons into Gaza. So this is certainly regarded as a significant issue. And even though we do, of course, have the protection against rockets and against any attempts to attack Israel from Gaza, it's always a lot better to prevent the weapons going in the first place so that you don't have to exercise the protective shield that we have in place. So, of course, I think this is regarded as quite a substantial and significant interception, and we hope that it'll somehow stem the huge amount of weapons and armory that's being smuggled into Gaza.
Absolutely. And finally, Israel is expecting the arrival of 90,000 new immigrants over the next 18 months. That is an unbelievable number. What's given rise to this increased number?
Well, I think there are a few things going on. First of all, 2020 is going to be what we would call in the business a relatively weak year as far as new immigrants are concerned. It's certainly going to be less than 2019 because of Corona. You would be surprised that there are still quite significant numbers of people who are arriving on Aliyah, people who had plans to come on Aliyah from before the Corona period, who've decided that they will go into quarantine. They will do whatever is needed to be done in order to make their dreams of living in Israel come true. So those people are still arriving, albeit in somewhat of a trickle now rather than a flood. Apparently this whole uncertainty that has surrounded COVID-19 and particularly the way that it has affected the Jewish communities in different countries around the world has given rise to people really thinking again about where they want to see their futures. And I don't know whether the way that Israel has dealt with the coronavirus has somehow influenced people to think that perhaps Israel is a better possibility, a better a future for them than where they currently live. I'm not sure whether that actually makes a lot of sense, but it seems as if that is something of a thought process that's going on within people's minds at the moment. But I think one of the other significant issues is the fact that we now have a new minister for absorption, and she comes from the Ethiopian community. Pnina Tamanoshata comes from an Ethiopian family, and she has decided that she is once and for all going to be addressing the issue of the Falashmora, the 7,500 Ethiopians who still remain in camps in Ethiopia wanting to come to Israel. This is an immensely complex issue because the Ethiopian community, being not Jewish, having been forced to convert to Christianity already many generations ago in order to protect their safety, and now having refound their Jewish roots, don't fall neatly under the law of return and the provisions of the law of return. And in fact, a new law had to be enacted called the law of entry in order to allow them to come to Israel to make Aliyah, but still 7,500 of them remain in Ethiopia for technical reasons, for bureaucratic reasons, for issues that, you know, they can't quite be found to fit within the law of entry. And she's decided that she's going to resolve this issue. She thinks that the fact that families have been split up and some members of the family have been allowed in Israel and others have not, she's decided that that's over now. She's going to deal with it. She's going to allow all of those people to come to Israel. So we're expecting 7,500 people just from Ethiopia to be making Aliyah over the next 18 months, perhaps even a little longer than that.
Mm, absolutely incredible. Really, really amazing to see 90,000 new immigrants anticipated over the next 18 months. Anthony Reich, this is where we love and leave you.